you. And if at any point you can't hear me, Mark, just start waving. I'm just opening my notes, and so I'm going to be splitting my screen between making sure I don't ramble too much, because when you get on Skype, you start to feel like you're just talking to yourself. And so also, if you find what I say funny, you can react to it so I know that you're paying attention or that I know that I'm being too boring. So I want to start with just an introduction about who I am, so you have a bit of a sense as to how I came to where I am right now. I'm going to talk about COM, what we do at COM, which is the Canadian Association of Labour Media. But then I'm going to talk a little bit more, try to actually close some of the gaps that I think have emerged between what Sarah said and what Dave said. Because I think that they both are correct and are talking about two worlds that are very, very different. And part of the difficulty of having a decline in quality labor reporting in the mainstream press is that the alternative press becomes the only place to have debates or discussions about labor. And then the mainstream press, you know, once in a while will publish a story about Sid Ryan or something because it was leaked to the Toronto Sun, right? So that'll be the second part of my talk. So I have a background in journalism. I went to Ryerson in journalism, and I am one of the few that dropped out of the program. I did the program for 2 years full-time and then 3 years part-time, so 5 years in total. And I just couldn't finish doing political work at the same time. I had to be full-time in the program there. But having a base, being trained within mainstream journalism, while also being involved with the student movement on the side and then becoming the editor-in-chief of one of the student papers at Ryerson, really helped for me crystallize exactly why we need to try and have mass distribution of the questions of the debates that that circulate among the left, and of course in this context with the labor movement. And I'll also just say one more thing too. You know, I'm in Quebec City right now. This morning, all the news ran quotes from Martin Coiture, who's the Treasury Board chair, president, I guess, of the province here, who basically is daring the unions who are striking right now with a special law, with back to work legislation. We are on the cusp of potentially a general strike in the public sector in Quebec. And I suspect none of you have read about it in any of the newspapers in English Canada, potentially not even seen the very little coverage that CBC and the Montreal Gazette have had. And I think that raises a lot of questions. There's also obviously regional issues, and if it's local, it's more newsy than if it's not local. But what does it do to our discussions of what is possible within our communities if we don't know what is going on even in the province next door, for example? And so I've kind of fallen into this world where I'm an Anglophone living in Quebec City, and I'm asked a lot to write about the struggle from a perspective of someone who doesn't understand the labor movement in Quebec, because it's bigger, it's way more bureaucratic, it's way more enshrined in institutions, it has way more sway. But it's also way more plagued with internal divisions and stuff that that just doesn't have a comparison, really, in any other province in Canada. So I'll talk about COM, and then I'll go back to these broader questions that I think are driving the reason why the panel today is happening. So the Canadian Association of Labour Media was founded in 1976 by the Canadian Labour Congress, and it evolved into what can kind of be described as a Canadian university press model of labor media, which actually doesn't mean labor journalists, it means the media of labor unions. And so what we provide is a kind of a network that is external to the national federations. We have every union affiliated with the CLC or not. As long as they join, they could be a member of COM. And through our umbrella, we're able to provide content. It's mostly, like, the most popular content we provide is, like, cartoons that aren't super funny, but some people love them, so that's kind of where we're at right now. But we're content filler, and because we're a cooperative, you know, you pay a membership due to be a member of COM, were able to kind of undercut some of the private PR firm work that has really proliferated within the labor movement. And that's kind of my secret goal with Calm, is to try and make those for-profit PR companies see that the labor movement's not necessarily a place where they can play. But that's a whole other discussion. And so through our work, I'm very lucky because I get to see some of the best journalism that's being produced by unions. And there is a lot of journalism being produced by unions. Most, if not all, of the large unions have magazines. The magazines are as slick or more slick as any mainstream magazine that you'll see in Canada. They have stable funding, which is critical. And in an industry where other magazines are tanking, that's actually quite interesting. But of course, they're the organ of the union, and so they're not providing critical coverage. They're not necessarily covering the debates within their union, or if they are, it's in a very 10,000 feet above the earth kind of way. But they still are producing very interesting journalism, and for some reason, the people on the left and certainly the mainstream are not at all paying attention to a lot of what these magazines are saying. One example that I really love is ACTRA, the actors. Union in Canada. They have probably the slickest magazine I've ever seen, and they talk to their members about issues plaguing or facing the Canadian film industry. And so how is it that we have the alternative media that Dave talked about, and obviously the mainstream press that Sarah talked about, and then we also have this weird labor press that exists, but that is really, really, really hyper central or located within the membership of the union itself. And is it effective? Are people reading it? I just got my copy of Uniforum, for example. I'm also a member of the Canadian Freelance Union, and so we got our bi-weekly newsletter. Do we read it? These are kind of discussions that I think need to happen, and I hope that we can kind of stimulate some of them under the banner of Calm. It's only my first year with the organization in a more than part-time capacity. I work about 30 hours a week for Calm. So, you know, it's going to be something interesting to see if we can pull anything out of it, because the reality is a lot of our members really just want cartoons, and they love the conference that we have every year, because the conference is a skills-building conference. It's the only one of its kind in Canada. And that's actually very important for skills training for most of our representatives who are volunteers in very small unions across Canada. And so that's who we are, and I'd love to hear questions or suggestions or ideas about how we convince unions to think more broadly about distribution with their messages, or if that's even possible. So I'll put that aside, you know, to talk about later. But I think the more interesting question is the decline of labor reporting more generally. And it's something that I'm very, very concerned about. Because it's not just that we've had a decline of labor reporting and all the media concentration that has completely and fundamentally changed how journalism operates in this country, but it also comes at the same time as there's been a rise in business reporting, right? And a rise in focusing on profits, on the real estate market, on investments, on what I would consider to be bullshit for the average person in this country. And I've had many debates with journalist friends who talk about, oh, these things are important for the average person to know. And maybe that's true, but it certainly has taken the place of stories about work, which I'm completely not surprised to hear Sarah say that that these are popular stories, that these are stories that people want to hear. And it's not as if there's ever a glory time. You know, in my book, I quote Upton Sinclair, who, you know, in the early 1900s was talking about how the mainstream press basically ignored unions until they were on strike. And so the only stories that you had in the mainstream press in the early 1900s was about strikes. It's basically the same right now, although it's not a guarantee that you will make the press if you're on strike. But there hasn't really ever been a situation where you've got quality debate on for the left, because of course the left has never really had a newspaper in the post-war period. I think you can make the argument in the pre-war period where a lot of the newspapers were organs of political parties. That was more the case. But then we moved to a period where it's a bias-free kind of environment, but bias-free, of course, doesn't mean bias free. It means, you know, maintaining the status quo. I'm just going to plug myself in. And so the decline of labor reporting has meant that it's been narrowed more and more and more and more narrowed. And so the only stories that you do tend to see are these insider baseball stories that Sarah referenced that I actually agree are completely boring and not what we should be talking about with the labor movement. Part of that is the fault of the labor movement, where, as Dave referenced, there's very little debate. The debate that exists is somewhat anemic. These things they tend to be left on convention floor, which is already a space that's really difficult to have a substantial debate. Convention floor should be crystallizing debates that have been happening between the conventions. It shouldn't be the only site of discussion. And then you get newspapers who are more or less ambivalent to this stuff. You have the salacious stories of Sid Ryan. You have most recently the story of someone who's been accused with 12 counts of sexual assault. He used to work at OPSU. And then, you know, a letter to the editor from Murray Cook saying, hey, Toronto Star, you didn't even mention that QB National is having a convention. This impacts what average people know about unions. And I spend a lot of time on flights, and I talk to a lot of, like, business people because I spend a lot of time on flights. I'm now having to sit with these people about unions. And it's in the average person, even business class person, not actual business class, because I'm not business class. I'm just sitting with a steerage or whatever. You say, well, don't you think that like average grocery workers should have a union? And I've never had someone say, no, I don't think that they should. It's like, oh yeah, they make sense. That makes sense. It's like, or not in my corporation, because I want to be able to fire people, but yeah, that makes sense. Like the lack of labor reporting means that there's such a lack of understanding of what a union is, which makes the ability to promote unionism or to organize workers even harder, because you're not starting from, hey, do you want to join a union? You're starting from, hey, have you ever heard this thing called a union? And they're like, yeah, I hear that they protect lazy workers. And you're like, okay, great. I have to start from -5 instead of starting from 0. It also becomes very difficult to do research and to actually promote debate, especially on the left. And I found this when I was writing my book. I relied a lot on mainstream press coverage of what was going on, because the whole idea of the book was to take a current snapshot of where labor is. And it meant that I was constantly referencing the same journalists in the same papers, because there was such a lack of information, basic reporting. And that also plays into a right-wing attempt to marginalize, silence, and trivialize the labor movement, which is a real problem. The other structural thing that I think people need to kind of think about is the quality of journalism students entering the field these days. When you look at the impact that high tuition fees and high student debt have had, it's actually quite dramatically narrowed who is even getting into the mainstream press. And to find people who are representative of ethnic diversity, of class diversity, of different abilities is actually quite difficult, especially when an entry into writing or into a journalism job tends to be a free internship. So already you're going to have someone who's able to live for free, who's able to get a couple of clippings, and who can find their way in a little bit easier. And this is part of the debates I have with Anglophone journalists in this city who lament the quality of people who are being sent to cover, you know, politics in this province for various English newspapers or broadcast outlets. These are all the reasons for why we need to imagine how do we open up spaces to bolster journalism more generally, labor journalism more generally, and how do we redefine the frame such that we can talk about labor and labor issues and not be sidelined as being a bunch of leftists or whatever. One of the things I think we need to do is find ways to push back against certain narratives that have managed to get their way into the press, where we're covering, you know, profits and where you know the National Post has no problem announcing that the Royal Bank is on track to have its worst year in 5 years or something like this in quarter three, because their quarter three profits were lower than the quarter three profits the year before. You know, the average person looks at that and goes, oh no. Doesn't necessarily think, wait a minute, we're talking about profits here. And then, of course, quarter four comes around and all of a sudden the Royal Bank has had another year of record profits. The entire frame of how we speak about the corporate world is dominated by the corporate frame. And that has such a huge impact on how people understand their relationship to capital and their relationship to profit. And not even making the connection between, hey, I received this thing from the Royal Bank saying I have to pay for all of these new account fees, that sucks, and, oh, Royal Bank has $7 billion extra corporate profits because of these Royal Bank fees, but they don't, it's so rarely framed in that way. So it isn't just the decline of the labor beat, but it's also the absolutely uncritical mainstream reporting of the corporate world. And it has gone so far to the right that to have even a rational discussion about, hey, maybe we should have some wealth redistribution of the banks, gets you basically painted as a communist, which is fine, except some people hear communists and they're like, we don't like you, which we need to change as well. So I don't know how much time I have because I can barely see the little window, but I'm already there. Oh, 2 minutes. God. That's great, because I like to leave my last part of my talks to the solutions part so that I run out of time. I'm like, oh, sorry, you can't hear all my great solutions. You have to buy my book, which also is not full of solutions. Then the question becomes, what's the role of labor in this process? And I think that labor has to start thinking about, do we have organs that are labor-funded, that actually provide critical and mainstream news to average people? Like, the unions have the money to do it. They have the resources to do it, but there are political barriers to doing it. And so I think that we need to have a debate. Is this something that could help? Is this something that is potentially desirable? What has the Unifora Ravel partnership produced by way of labor reporting? Are we ever measuring this stuff? Can we have a sense as to whether or not we could replicate it with other unions at Ravel or with other organizations like Rank and File? And we have to be honest about, labor leaders don't like negative coverage. I know a lot of progressive papers get threatened with their funding if their president gets a bad rub. And so we also need to be agitating within the large national unions to say, look, if we truly believe that we need to shift the corporatist right-wing frame that dominates the mainstream press, and we have the resources to do it, then, maybe we need to set the egos the aside a little bit and let rank and file shit on the president of OSSTF, who then ends up running for a liberal and loses. Maybe. Right, but we're nowhere in that kind of discussion, and I think that that's something that is quite tangible. We as I said, as I started off the bat, there is a quality that exists. Like, one of the side effects of the collapse of mainstream journalism is that there's a lot of journalists who now work for unions. Like, we have the talent, we have the skill, we potentially have the resources. Is this something that we can agitate that the national unions start to consider to embark on?